Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. It is a show for people who are curious about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. I'm Aaron Lammer. I'm joined on the show by my co-host, Jay Kang. We talked on this episode about CES, where Kodak unveiled a really weird Bitcoin mining machine. We talked about Kodak Coin, which is a different venture, Dentacoin, which is a venture we don't totally recommend. We talked about Toshi, Brian Armstrong from Coinbase's new project, and we talked about Warren Buffett's comments on CNBC about Bitcoin and played a bit of that interview. And our guest today, if you want to jump ahead, is Ledger Status, which is one of my favorite Twitter accounts that has trading advice and like what altcoin bags to buy, sell, charts, all that kind of stuff. And he came on and gave us a really good beginner's primer for people who are just getting into this stuff about what to look at when you're looking at a chart and what kinds of things he pays attention to, and also his own journey, because this is something he started in the last year and didn't have any background in particularly either. So that's a great interview. I look forward to people hearing that. Coin Talk is presented in partnership with Medium. You can actually find all of our episodes and transcripts and show notes and bonus stuff at medium.com/Coin Talk. We're going to be doing all sorts of cool stuff with Medium. They have incredible crypto-related content. I feel like almost all the stories we talk about this end up being from Medium anyway. So find us there. Also find us on any podcast app that you look for us on. Just search Coin Talk. And if you want to send us any feedback, any questions, whatever, it's hi@cointalk.show. Okay, let's do it. Here's episode one.
This episode of Coin Talk was recorded Wednesday, January 10th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $14,476.
Hello, welcome to Coin Talk. Hey, Jay.
Yo.
Slightly inauspicious day to kick this podcast off. Market kind of dropping its pants a little bit.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we can't just do podcasts when the market goes up, because we would have nothing to talk about.
I agree with you. You're taking like the New York sports talk radio analogy.
Yeah,
there.
Like if the Jets and the Mets are good, then what is Francesa going to talk about?
I agree with this. And I also feel like when the emphasis is taken off of Bitcoin going to the moon, we start just seeing the weirder and weirder stuff that's more fun to talk
about.
Yeah,
we scratch a little bit more because like people aren't sort of consumed by excitement and greed all the time. So it seems like there actually is a lot of weird stuff shaking out right now. Like,
well, so CES is happening in Las Vegas right now.
Yes.
And the first I heard of this was that Kodak was issuing a mining rig.
Yeah, and people were, I mean, in true crypto form, there were cell phone photos taken of, it is kind of amazing that like basically cell phone cameras are just cameras now, but the only place where they look like cell phone cameras where the lighting is all messed up and like there's distortion is in the crypto world. But there were photos of a mining rig that Kodak had quote unquote released or was showing people at CES.
I'm going to give my unvarnished first opinion upon seeing the Kodak mining rig, which is it looks like someone bought a mining rig from Bitmain or a brandless Hong Kong manufacturer and then put a Kodak logo on the side. There's nothing distinctive about its design at all. It looks exactly like every mining rig you've ever seen.
Yeah. Even the Kodak logo does not look like it was well applied on there.
Yeah, it's still you can still see them ironing them on before taking them out onto the floor. So yeah. I am correct then that this is not really a Kodak venture. This is someone who's licensed the Kodak name.
Yeah, I mean, I looked into this a little bit, and it seems like what Kodak has done, or perhaps some like poor scion, I guess that's how I think about it in my head, that like somebody is signing deals that they don't really know what it means. Somebody has licensed out two crypto projects at Kodak. The first is this mining system that will be sort of a timeshare in a mining rig. And Kodak says that it's going to use some of its space in its Rochester headquarters to store mining rigs. The second one is Kodak Coin, which as far as I can tell is a blockchain-based technology that photographers and other creative image people can use to track rights on the blockchain.
Wait a minute. Is the Kodak miner for mining Kodak coin, or are they just making a general purpose miner and also Kodak happen to be having like a digital rights coin?
Kodak miner is to mine Bitcoin. It is a completely different company that has licensed out the name. I believe it's like mostly like an LED company or something like that. And then a sort of media company that is called, let me look this up. It is called WENN, which is Worldwide News Network, I think. WENN, which is famous for paparazzi
Jay,
photos.
As a journalist, you're, of course, familiar with the Worldwide Entertainment Network.
Well, look, they have had one hit, which is that many years ago, because they do specialize in paparazzi photos, they were the ones who did the Britney Spears getting out of the car crotch photo.
So, they specialize so don't call them a one-hit wonder.
They seem to specialize in getting out of the cab crotch shots for celebrities. And so if you do one of those, it ends up everywhere on the internet. You and I, as both
media
people,
we've both had photos of that like taken above us.
Sure, but we also have had some interaction, or at least some knowledge, that sometimes actually tracking down rights of photos can be difficult for photographers.
Sure.
And so this one actually maybe has some sort of use case, but like, you know, as much as anything else.
Let's pull the brakes here slightly. The idea of selling digital rights of photos makes sense. And say creating a digital tool that scans the internet for photos that potentially you own the license of and ask for money. That stuff is certainly happening. You see that even on YouTube with songs. Making the jump to this should happen on the blockchain and it should be with a coin and that coin should be branded the same as like someone who used to make like shakeable instant film. You're just like asking people to make so many leaps that I don't understand like how anyone is supposed to get from point A to point B.
Well, look, I mean, what I agree with you. The only thing that I'll say is that there, like, you know, you and I talk about this quite a bit, which is that, like, can we imagine a world in which this product is useful? And, like, I would say that the only thing I will say in Kodak Coin's defense is that I can, as a former web editor who sometimes had to track down photo rights, honestly, I don't know what the coin would do, but yeah. If there was a blockchain-based, elegant, fast solution for all of this that allowed photographers to get some money directly who might be getting ripped off in other places, sure, that might be a good idea. Is it like a multi-billion dollar idea, or is it something that should triple? Like, so today, Kodak's stock price tripled.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
like, is it the type of thing that should allow a stock price or company valuation, which is one of the sort of storied great companies in American history, to triple? No, like, it's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the company is more valuable if so many people want to license its name, but
two people.
but if the company is now three times as valuable, I just don't see the incentive for them to actually do any of this stuff. You like, okay, maybe the coin is going to be traded as a shit coin on some shit exchange. But the miner is just transparently a scam. Like, the miner is selling 2 years of rights on the miner, and they're quoting basically how much money you would make if the difficulty did not go up at all, which we know factually the difficulty will go up.
Yeah.
So this is literally the same tactics that people use to sell timeshares. It's misleading people.
Scam. It's exactly a timeshare scam. I mean, like, that's sort of, and that's, look, the two questions that I have, which you know, if someone works at Kodak and wants to get in touch with us, it's hi@cointalk.show. Show? I should probably know that.
They should send us one of these. Look.
Please let us know, because I just want to know who is making these decisions. Like, Kodak, obviously times are tough for Kodak and have been for many years. Kodak is one of the great American products and one of the great American companies. You know?
They don't even make Kodak film anymore, though. Fuji
sure,
film
sure. For example, yes, that is true. But like, someone at Kodak, maybe like, I don't know, Charles Kodak IV, who does not have the entrepreneurial spirit that
his
great grandfather had, is just selling this name off for anything based on blockchain. And, like, I guess my question out of it is, like, look, there are a lot of companies that are hurting. Is this sort of thing where you are just trying to catch a wave and sort of, like, jab your stock prices so perhaps you can sell out? Like, is this a thing that's going to keep happening?
I mean, I'd have to say until it stops happening that it will keep happening. Until it fails for someone. I mean, we already had that iced tea company that pivoted to the blockchain.
Long Island iced tea.
So, I mean, to give a little credit to the crypto markets, I feel like people who are interested in the stock market will sometimes look down their nose at the utter stupidity of crypto buyers and how they will buy anything based on vapor alone. And I think we're seeing that people are pretty willing to buy those as publicly traded stocks as well.
Do you really think people were like buying? Well, I guess somebody needed to buy.
Who bid Kodak up three times? Do you think that's like crypto audiences moving over and being like, now that I'm getting into the stock market, I'll take Long Island Iced Tea Company and Kodak.
I need a more stable portfolio. So this is my crypto E-Trade account.
Hey, this is Aaron. I want to pause things here briefly to give you a quick word from our partner Medium about their cryptocurrency landing page, which you can find at me.dm/crypto. That's me.dm/crypto, not medium.com/crypto. It's got all the best stories on Medium about cryptocurrency, which is just about all the best stories about cryptocurrency. I'll give you an example of one that I read on Medium that I talked about in last week's episode. Ryan Selkis, a.k.a. at 2Bit Idiot, talking about Ripple. That was great. I think there's an interview, looks up like there's an interview with the Verge coin team up there, so that should be entertaining. Anyway, if you want to keep up with this stuff, I recommend you bookmark it and check it regularly. I do, Jay does, and it's where we get a lot of the stuff we talk about on the show. So here's that show.
It's strange that you bring up this idea that the crypto audience might be getting slightly smarter, or perhaps like the stock market audience is also
maybe they're meeting somewhere in the dumb middle.
So like, I think that we should talk about the coin that everyone is talking about within this context, which is DantaCoin.
Everyone's talking about it.
It really is. I feel like DantaCoin, in a world of scams, DantaCoin is the, I almost feel bad for it because it gets singled out so
much. I'm picturing you like on the train coming here, like approaching a group of people and like, excuse me, I couldn't help but notice, were you talking about DantaCoin?
Yeah. Everyone's talking about the Michael Wolff book and DantaCoin, if you look at my Twitter feed.
Okay, so everyone, specifically the like crypto nerds that Jay follows, is talking about DantaCoin. What is DantaCoin? Why are they talking about it?
Okay. According to its website,
allegedly,
DantaCoin is the first blockchain concept designed for the global dental industry. The DantaCoin ERC-20 token is configured to be used globally by all individuals. DantaCoin aims at improving dental care worldwide and making it affordable through crowd power. Numerous blockchain-based tools will be developed and implemented. That last sentence is my favorite part. You're like, look, blockchain stuff and global dentistry.
When they said
at the end, more blockchain shit.
When they said that blockchain implements would be developed, I was picturing like one of those picks that you put in your teeth, but it's connected directly to the blockchain.
The reason why people are mad about this is because it has a $1 billion quote unquote valuation, right? And it seems to be a token that is used so that people in different countries can sort of crowdsource their buying power together and drive down the price of dental work or something like that. I have no idea. Like, if you read, and look, this is not me speaking out of ignorance. Like, I don't think anyone really understands what the concept is.
Okay, well, let's not single out DantaCoin, and let's just say that most ERC-20, which are tokens that are issued on the Ethereum platform, that have a utility where you're supposed to use the token to achieve something. It's not like DantaCoin is any more ridiculous than, let's say, the average ERC-20 utility token.
I mean, look, that's really just sort of like, all right, so the DantaCoin stats here, right? I just want to read them out.
Okay, read them out.
I want you to react.
I'll react in real time with sound effects.
It's worth $1.3 billion market cap.
Wow.
Okay. All right. There are 8 trillion DantaCoins right now, or possible. And 325 billion in circulating supply. The way that they arrive at their market cap is that a DantaCoin costs 0.4 cents. So it's like 40% of a penny. And if you multiply that by the total number of DantaCoins, then you arrive at 1.3 billion.
Okay.
The tokenization of everything. It is a world in which I think none of us actually want to live, right? Would you want to live in a world in which like you have to have a separate token to pay for dental work?
Probably not, but I could see like going understand. Through.
How are you like not? What is the probably from? That's terrible.
Well, look.
You're like, I have left. I can't get gas on my way to go to the dentist because I remember my Dentacoin, but I did not remember my gas coin. I mean, that sounds terrible.
I mean, I think that I'm already engaged in insurance like experiences around things like dentistry and health where I'm buying into some larger contract. So if I could buy into that contract as some sort of an autonomous Ethereum being, why not?
Oh my God. All right. Well, so like speaking of
autonomous Ethereum beings,
let's talk a little bit about Toshi.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you can't really talk about Toshi without talking about Brian Armstrong. Okay. So Brian Armstrong is the co-founder of Coinbase. Coinbase, probably the most influential American company in the crypto space.
Yeah, I think undeniably.
And they've caught flack at various junctures in the last few months for a variety of things. I would say the most glaring one being probably the rollout of Bitcoin Cash on Coinbase and feelings that the messaging, transparency, and
Accusations of insider trading.
In a very San Francisco fashion, Brian Armstrong has a side project that he looks to take over the world with that is built. I don't know if it's built within Coinbase or is a separate project. Separate project. And that project is called Toshi. And much as Brian Armstrong has been criticized for his preference of Ethereum over Bitcoin, which is something that he had stated before, that he was holding more Ethereum than Bitcoin. Toshi is very much imagining the universe of the autonomous Ethereum being.
Yes.
What is, you downloaded Toshi before I did. What was your experience like?
Well, I downloaded it. I signed in. There was like a row of power users that were listed on there. One of them was Laura Shin, who we speak to from time to
Shouts
time.
Shouts to Laura Shin.
The reporter at Forbes. So I sent her a message and said, hello, on chat.
Hello, autonomous Ethereum being.
And then I saw that the reason why I signed up is because Brian Armstrong had been saying that there was a version of Twitter that they had made on Ethereum.
That's
right?
Leroy, right?
Yeah, Leroy.
Yeah.
And so I tried to sign up for Leroy, which is supposed to be free, but I could not because it cost... There is a transaction fee for a $0 Ethereum purchase, apparently. So Leroy...
Hey, man, you got to pay the gas, man.
Leroy is free. It costs 0.0 ETH, but you have to pay the transaction fee for 0.0 ETH to sign up. I certainly was not going to load Ethereum onto Toshi to pay a $0, you know, to pay the gas on a $0 transaction. And so what I did was I screenshotted the transaction thing. We'll put it up in our show notes. I think it's pretty funny. And then I never looked at Toshi again.
Okay. So I gave Toshi a bit more of a chance, at least intellectually. So I looked at how Brian Armstrong describes Toshi on, it's on Medium, actually, our partner, Medium, on the Toshi blog. He says, it's a dApp browser, which is to say a place to browse decentralized apps built on the Ethereum network. It's a way to use them, browse them, like CryptoKitties and Leroy would be an example. It's a mobile Ethereum wallet, and it's an identity and reputation system. Kind of a lot to bite off.
What is an identity system?
Well, okay, so I'm gonna give, like, he says, imagine someone using Toshi in the future having the following experience. Okay.
Think before we go, we should explain to the listeners that this is an app you download onto your iPhone or Android.
Yes.
And then when you open it, it essentially becomes another phone where there are other apps within the app.
The closest I can like draw is when they came out with that Facebook phone that was like an Android variant and it was just like your whole phone was Facebook. Like, it's imagining that these decentralized apps become the app store on your phone. But there is the weird level there, which is this is not a crypto phone. You are nesting yourself deeper and deeper into this Ethereum universe. And I think that's the thematic thing that I notice about it, which is it keeps demanding more and more of you to see this vision. So he says, a user receives their first Ethereum from a friend, charity, or job. They write down a 12-word phrase that only they know. Number two, over that time, the value of that wealth will go up. Number three, they start to complete small tasks within the app.
Okay, so why is the value? What, number two, what is the basis of that?
Because the Ethereum keeps being worth, like, because that's part of the worldview. Because
Ethereum can only go up.
Only go up.
Okay. All right.
Okay. They start to complete small tasks within the app to earn small sums, like answering questions, labeling photos, or translating text. They now have a small way to earn money, a job, even if it is menial to start.
Okay, so I have a question here.
Yeah. So it's like big. It's like mechanic. You like make yourself into a Mechanical Turk.
Who's paying me to answer these questions?
I think it's like Mechanical Turk. There's like a buyers and sellers market for services that are done through Ethereum.
So it's like Quora, but you, the person who asks the question, has to pay for the answers.
Well, it's not necessarily an answer. I might be like, transcribe this podcast, 0.01 Ethereum.
Yes, but that's not, those are the examples. He said, you all you have to do is answer a question.
No, it says answering questions, labeling photos, translating text.
Labeling photos. Okay, so you
it's
start
like content like, moderation.
You're starting out in the at the bottom and you're being paid Ethereum. And the reason
you're
and,
doing content well, moderation for Ethereum.
And the okay. And the reason why this is always gonna work is because even if you send a small amount of Ethereum at the beginning, because according to Brian Armstrong, it is physically impossible for the price of Ethereum to go down. And since it only goes up, that obviously any amount of Ethereum that you get at an earlier date will be worth more at a later date.
Correct.
Okay.
They're incentivized via small payouts from a private charity to complete some online classes. Perhaps watching a Khan Academy video and taking a short test to demonstrate retention.
Oh,
with education and credentialing attached to their profile, their employability increases. One of the really weird things about this piece of writing is the first piece is clearly like aimed at cryptocurrency enthusiasts. Yeah. Says, there hasn't been an easy way to store and spend your own Ethereum on mobile to date. Okay, you got me. Yeah, I'm with you. And then like all of a sudden it just like takes this like hard right and it's like, you're a peasant. You need an education. You're going to need to build up some credibility with employers.
It's very video gamey, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like the
get up
Sims
to the next
type
level.
Of way, like where you're just like, where the whole world like starts at, you know, like civilization or something like that, where you're just like, or even like StarCraft, where you start out and you're like a fucking miner who's like fucking going in and mining mana, and then
you start
building people. Yeah, it's like that's what that's,
I'm here
that's
to be a sumo
like.
Coin baron, not a sumo coin serf.
All right, so let's keep
there's
going.
But there's one final thing. So you asked, well, what's the reputation thing? It says, with this newfound surety, they decided it's time to launch their own business. They're able to obtain a loan via DApp on the platform with the reputation they've accumulated over time. Their business begins employing others in their community, creating a positive feedback loop towards economic growth in that region.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially like it's a video game. It's like I've been playing Stardew Valley on my Nintendo Switch, but it's like similar to that. It's just this fantasy that like everything is linear and that like within 4 days, you know, you can have lived half a life. I mean, that's... So why do you think Brian Armstrong is doing this? Because like we've talked to other people that we know about Toshi. I will say that in Brian Armstrong's defense, right?
Yeah.
That he says, look, this is very rudimentary. It's only an idea. Don't judge it as anything real yet. I am just trying to display what I feel like the entire value proposition of Ethereum is, right?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, look, it's San Francisco. San Francisco is its own universe where this kind of thinking is more celebrated. And I don't necessarily push back at his specific vision. I think he gives a pretty gigantic vision of Ethereum there. What I push back against is that everyone wants to become an Ethereum serf. Like, if that's the utopia that you're promising at the end of being a crazy F maximalist, I'm out.
Yeah, I really don't want to. Participate in a world where the vision for education for people is that maybe private charities will somehow incentivize a person to watch a Khan Academy video. That's his utopia of education.
I mean, okay.
That is terrible.
So he tweeted also last week. I don't mean to get on Brian Armstrong.
No,
I'm curious about him. He should come on the show.
But he says, I wish there was a way to donate cryptocurrency to charities while knowing that they were going to keep the cryptocurrency and not sell it. Even if they spent the cryptocurrency by sending it to other people but not selling it, that would be fine. Otherwise, someone is going to miss out on the future upside, so you get fewer donations. I wonder about the recent amazing donations done by Pineapple Fund. How many of those charities are cashing it out versus holding it?
So, I mean, Jesus Christ.
He said holding. I just accidentally translated that to hodling it. But, okay, this is like a like pervasive, like, your entire life is through Ethereum. Hodling is basically like a religious obligation.
I don't think it's an Ethereum thing specifically.
No, it's like the idea that crypto is going to take over the entire world. But I think that symbolically, someone like Brian Armstrong having an allegiance to Ethereum rather than Bitcoin is evidenced by this kind of a worldview. This is an Ethereum kind of worldview that every single system is going to interlock.
I don't agree with that. I think that it is the San Francisco vision of somebody who thinks everyone else in the world is stupid, and like if only they understood that all they have to do is take contributions in Ethereum, put them on Toshi mobile wallet, never touch it, and because Ethereum can only go up based on the laws of physics, that at some point they'll have like 10x the money that they gave them, and then they can spend it. Like, or like, I think what he's basically saying is that wait for the Ethereum world to show up, and then you can like do charity through like Toshi or something like that. So I this sort of stuff I find like this is one of the things that I actually find kind of interesting about the crypto world invading normies like you and me. And you know,
you're not that normal.
Well, like look, me 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Which is like, there is no way to react to this except to be like, what the hell are you talking about? You know? It's like, I do think that there is a separation right now between the people who are tasked with messaging for cryptocurrencies and the general public, because like this series of tweets, I think, is insane.
Nothing that has happened at Coinbase in the last 2 months makes me feel confident in Coinbase.
Agreed. Coinbase, sponsor the show.
All right. Last thing before we get on our guest, we're about to talk to Mr. Ledger Status himself in a bit. But do you see Warren Buffett was talking crypto today?
Oh my God. I feel like if you're a rich guy, if your net worth is over $300 million and you are in front of any sort of reporter, the first thing they'll ask you is like, what's up with Bitcoin?
Oh, he says that. He says that like, at the end, he talks about basically what happens when he talks to students now.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Okay, here it goes. Here it goes.
In terms of cryptocurrencies, generally, I can say almost with certainty that they will come to a bad ending. Now, when it happens or how or anything else, I don't know. But I know this. If I could buy long-term puts, if I could buy a five-year put on every one of the cryptocurrencies, I'd be glad to do it. But I would never short a dime's worth.
Have you thought about trading the futures to take a negative position on Bitcoin?
No.
You would not do that.
No, there's no reason. I get into enough trouble with things I think I know something about. Why in the world should I take a long or short position in something I don't know anything about? So, we don't have to know what cocoa beans are going to do or cryptocurrencies. We just have to focus on 8 or 10 stocks, that businesses basically that we think are decent businesses. But I do think that I think what's going on definitely will come to a bad ending. I mean, you've got virtually everybody. I have a class. I have 11 schools coming on Friday. The questions will be on Bitcoin, and I won't know the answers.
Although when we sat down, Warren, you did say I should have announced that we were getting involved in Bitcoin this morning.
Well, that is true. I mean, that would be much more interesting to the audience that we were going to issue a whole series of cryptocurrencies tomorrow. But we aren't, believe me. And we don't own any. We're not short any. We'll never have a position in them.
Whoa. Can you imagine what Berkshire Hathaway coin would do?
It's kind of an amazing statement because I feel like every famous like rich guy is asked to thread the needle of talking about Bitcoin. And basically what like, people want you to say something negative about Bitcoin so that then they can tell you were stupid 1 year later when Bitcoin is worth more. I like what he says, which is basically like, no, I am not gambling on this. Like, I have no horse in this race. It would be stupid to be on either side of this. Like, I'm interested in stock businesses.
Yeah. I have no problem with what Warren Buffett said. And I did see some people try and excerpt. I'm glad we listened to the whole thing because I heard some people just excerpting the part where he says, I don't think this is going to end that well. Like, and
I like how he says that it's going to come to a bad end. It's like the end of a Victorian novel.
do we doubt that this is going to come to a bad end of sorts?
I think he's like, it would not. I don't think Buffett will be surprised if Bitcoin goes up 5 times this year. All he's saying is like, it's going to end in tears.
Yeah. And that also, I'm not messing with that.
Yeah. I don't mess with that kind of shit.
Which fine.
I think that's a valuable perspective. I think that like online, particularly, you know, if you're interested in the stuff on Twitter, there's this huge belief that if you're not with us, you're against us.
Oh my God, that's the worst part of crypto.
Every person who has any skepticism is spreading FUD, and that you're an idiot if you didn't buy. Like if you choose to neither buy nor short, you're like, clearly on the short side. Yeah. And I think there's like a very reasonable perspective that's like, I'm totally neutral.
Yeah.
On this.
I mean, the part that it is a type of sort of weird team. I don't know. It's just this tribalism that's very strange where you have people who like will publicly have sold a lot of their Bitcoin at like, let's say like $2,000 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They make a point about technology, you know?
Yeah.
And then the first three responses in their Twitter, not to talk about Twitter so much, but the first three responses are like, are you the idiot who sold at $2,000? It's like, are you guys like, what is going on? You know, like this guy has no right to speak anymore in public because he sold Bitcoin a little bit early. I mean, that's insane.
If you ever sell your Bitcoin, that will be on your tombstone.
JK. Sold at 800.
Sold at $1,500.
Sold the diff.
All right. Should we talk to Ledger status?
Yeah. So our guest today is a guy who you might have seen if you are familiar with Twitter, crypto Twitter. His name is Brian, but he goes by Ledger status, and he's started a project in which he is using both sort of his skills in that he's developed as a stock trader since he was 15 years old, and this sort of media business that he has been part of to try and chronicle the way in which he's learned about cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, I mean, to put this in perspective, we caught a little flack on the preview episode because I kept saying that I have no idea what I'm doing and that me and Jay are total amateurs at this. That is both accurate and inaccurate. I would say that we're like obsessive amateurs who've spent way too much of our free time on this in the last few months. But it's very obvious when you go on and you start following people on Twitter who really know about trading and that kind of stuff. And a lot of them are charlatans. I certainly like funneled through a lot of their feeds as I was checking it out.
A lot of them are Pepe avatars.
Yeah, a lot of them. There's some Pepe avatars. There's some people who are trying to sell you something. I found him to be like one of the most reputable, reasonable, and at times skeptical of those voices. And so he's been very influential on my own thinking. Jay is always making fun of me because I will like espouse a viewpoint that is actually just a Ledger status viewpoint.
I'll just say, no, I read that tweet too. And secondly, I will say I am in agreement with you that the part of the reason why I think both of us like him is because he does not have sort of these pretensions that he's a genius or that he's a genius picker, that we are going through the process with him, and that's sort of what we hope the podcast would be as well. So let's give him a call.
Welcome, Brian Krogsgaard, aka Ledger Status.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
I have to admit I did not know your name until 2 hours ago.
Yeah, that's okay. That's how I've kind of marketed myself in this realm. I was findable, but I wasn't doxxed, if you will. That's what people like to say in this space. A lot of people are anonymous, and I never really wanted to be, but it was also kind of a secret side project, so I didn't really use my full name. But when I started my podcast, I decided I didn't want my co-hosts and guests to be calling me Ledger. So I started saying, you know, my name is Brian, that's fine.
Hey, where does the name Ledger status come from?
Well, Ledger, because of the way blockchain works and the ledger that's created when this whole thing's in operation. And then my main business is actually called Post Status, which is a WordPress like news site. It just fit and people seem to like it okay, so I went with it.
So what were like the, you know, from that standpoint of someone who worked within the publishing community, what got you into crypto in the first place? What were your first few steps?
I'm like most people that FOMO'd in 2017. I think a huge percentage of people trading crypto today were not trading crypto before the year 2017. However, my awareness of Bitcoin and the blockchain space goes back many years, even to when there was the crash that happened before the first bubble pop. And for whatever reason, I just kind of ignored it, never got actually into it and realized the monetary potential and totally thought the bubble concepts were fine. And then for some reason, it just clicked this year, and I totally FOMO'd into the original Ethereum run.
That was where you jumped in, circa Ethereum going to the moon.
You're the second person who has told us that like Ethereum was his gateway drug in. Like for the people who are new to crypto, can you just tell us a little bit about what that was like, the first sort of Ethereum sniff?
Yeah, what are the hallmarks of the Ethereum generation? Because I think there are like, even within this year, there's like two or three crypto generations. Like, what can we say about the Ethereum youth?
I was really kind of the second leg of the Ethereum FOMO crowd, because by the time I got in, you'd already reached like maximum euphoria for the people that saw Ethereum at $5, $7, $10. So that my first purchase was in May, like it was really recent. So it was like $70 or $100. It's hard to remember anymore. So I just remember
basically in like 8 months, you've gone from owning no crypto to like having like part of your identity be ledger status.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. I even have new people, like, you know, new Twitter people that will say something like, I'm an OG, and I'm like, what? completely wrong. I try to be transparent about the fact that I'm new, but there's this group of people that are new enough, but come from a complementary skill set. So for me, the nature of open source software compared with business interests really connected with me because of what I deal with in the WordPress space. With Automattic, that owns WordPress.com, and then the other big companies like GoDaddy and others that are really invested in the WordPress ecosystem. And then combined with the fact that I started trading stocks when I was 15 years old, you know, my dad gave me a little bit of money and said I could do whatever I want with it as long as it was investing. So, you know, I got my first like online trading accounts when E-Trade and TD Ameritrade and those were really big. Back when I was 15 years old, so I was 17 years ago, and I remember using Bollinger Bands and, you know, these technical things when I was a teenager.
What do you think it would be like if you were like 15 now? Like if you had been 15 during the crypto boom, do you think you'd still be alive now?
I have no idea what I would be. I think if I was 15 and I was aware of this, I would probably be saving money from working at the restaurant, bussing tables, trying to like buy a mining rig or something.
Yeah, you're also lucky. But one thing that we were both struck by was that when we read your website, that we learned a lot of this stuff that you're telling us about, like you're new to the space and that you're sort of learning as you go along, and that what you want to create is almost like a document of you learning how to do this stuff. Like, what has that learning process been like for you? I mean, it seems like you've learned a lot quickly. Like, how much of your life has this taken over?
More than I would have anticipated. For me, everything I've ever done, I start to dig in, and for some reason, I'm drawn to share about it. So, you know, I majored in engineering in school. I didn't major in web development or computer science. And when I dug into that space, it was really a matter of just going head first, and I called it taking myself back to college, basically. And in a period of 6 months or a year, however long, I kind of learned the skills that would be required to then go do something professionally. And I went full time doing web stuff well before I would have expected either. And then then and now, there was a vacuum of people not really sharing what they know. And I've always been able to have some kind of knack for taking what I've learned, recognizing that I'm not an expert in that necessarily, but I can always teach people that are a step or two steps or five steps behind where I am right now. So even though like you don't know everything, you can transition that knowledge to the people that are newer than you. What's been interesting about crypto is the fact that almost everyone is newer than you. You know, if you like the rate of new users is so fast that every few months there are probably more people than everyone that existed before, you know, just a few months prior, because there's just this swell of new users, new investors, and they don't know anything.
What sort of drew you to want to teach, like especially when you're new yourself?
I've always had this draw towards some form of community within what I'm doing, and I don't know why per se. I just love sharing stuff. So within crypto, like the best way to keep up with the news and like why is the price doing what it's doing has always been Twitter. And then disseminating that information beyond Twitter, I feel like is important because normal human beings aren't going to like read crypto Twitter all day.
God, I hope not. That would be terrible. Yeah.
So like how do you feel like your approach differs from like the average like buy these bags kind of account?
Yeah, I really like to address as much as I can, like what the risk profile is and basically kind of share things as if someone was sharing it with me, like what they're investing in and being as real as I possibly can. And that includes wins and losses, you know, like, and I think what sets me apart is people that have been in the space longer than me. Like maybe they were in this when there was no one on Twitter taking their advice like it was gospel. In 2015 or 2016 or even sooner. And now people really are taking that pretty seriously. So I try to be...
oh my God, yeah. You can see like a one-to-one correlation effect when a sort of influential Twitter person pimps a bag. Like it really does kind of jump a little bit depending on the market cap. But
yeah, and that's certainly...
It's
certainly no reason to buy because those things equalize over time. And, you know, new market makers are getting involved, like big money that makes that go away. I mean, everybody gets into this because either they're excited about the technology or they're excited about the financial elements of being able to make a little money. And there's nothing wrong with that. So if I can help guide someone in the right direction, preferably to teach themselves or to like show them how to learn and not just like they look at my chart, I say it's a good buy, so they go buy. That's not going to help them in the long run. They're going to lose their money probably, or at least their Bitcoin, if not their US dollars.
How are you dealing with this era? Like we were talking earlier on this show about Dentacoin and like when you name what week it is, like it would be a different coin, but there's always going to be like... something kind of ridiculous happened. Yeah, a mega pump or like something that's very hard to see the utility of. And I'm curious, like, does it bother you to be pro or con any of these things specifically? Like, does it bother you to be like, well, it's a good buy, but like, this is totally a scam?
Yeah. There are certain ones that I really don't like to be involved in. Like some of the ones where I feel like they're... forking Bitcoin, for instance, is a really popular way to get a big surge in price right now. I don't like those, especially if they're trying to steal the Bitcoin name. Like I'm a pretty anti Bitcoin Cash person, but for that reason, because I think it's a threat to the overall economy. But then there's others like all these altcoins that seem very scammish, like where the team controls 40%, they have no real product, the white paper is copied. I don't like those either. I really try to steer away from them. And there's always going to be scams and you just got to be careful. On the whole, though, the scams are fewer today than it used to be. There used to be even more. And I've learned that from getting to know people that have been around for several years.
I think when people enter this space right now, they want to learn about chart analysis, they see these terms like, you know, cloud entry or Fibonacci resistances. For people who are starting out in crypto, who are interested in trading, who, like yourself, want to start to learn this stuff, like what are like three things that you think that they should know?
Sure. The first is that you need to know the current market cap of whatever you're trading, because these things surge in rankings, essentially. So people will buy something because it's a low price, like maybe it's 6 cents, but it might be worth $20 billion in market cap. And therefore, it's going to be less likely to go to, you know, 1,000. It's not like you're buying Bitcoin at 6 cents. You're buying something that has a much larger supply than the Bitcoin, which has 21 million supply. It might have a billion supply or whatever. So that's why the price is low. So you need to know what the price is relative to the market cap and supply. That's definitely number one. And if I'm looking at one that within the market cycle, which is also the second indicator that I would recommend, crypto is all about market cycles. So over the past couple of months, it would have been of great value to choose something that's in a lull in with regards to market cycle. And if you're trying to choose between one that's 10 cents and one that's $100 in terms of the retail price, the 10 cent one is probably going to do better because of that herd mentality of new people that think 10 cents is cheaper than $100, even if the market cap of the $100 one is much lower than the one that's 10 cents. So if I was trying to choose between both of those, both of them feel ripe to gain value versus Bitcoin, then I would probably choose the 10 cent one if I equate all fundamentals and everything else. So yeah.
How do you figure out like what market cycle we're in? Because I think the thing that you are talking about right now is something that, you know, everyone was observing, but, you know, just one of the things that you learn, I guess, when you're gambling essentially is like, don't follow that sort of money, you know, like don't get more aggressive just because someone's bleeding money, just wait and they'll get to you. Like how do you sort of determine what a market cycle is in crypto?
Yeah, I'm also curious about like someone just showed me like a chart that was kind of like hold in January and February, buy alts in March and April. And I was like, we all just started doing this in 2017. Yeah. So how is there an established yearly market cycle?
I have no other January to compare this with.
Well, you do. You can always look at the history of the charts for older coins. So I would advise look at Bitcoin's historical pricing. You can use a site like TradingView to do that. And look at some of the older, more established coins and see how they've cycled. One that has done that is like Dash. Every year seems to have this markup cycle, or Monero's kind of done that. Another one is Syscoin, which is like a much lower market cap, but you can clearly see these yearly cycles and markups. Basically, though, the best way to determine that is to look at price relative to Bitcoin, and this would be my third big thing. Looking at US dollar value in crypto can have its advantages, but for the most part, like unless you are really, really a dead project, everything's gaining in value relative to the dollar. But if you're investing in anything other than Bitcoin and buying and holding Bitcoin, if it can't outpace the growth of Bitcoin during whatever trade period you're looking at, then you might as well just hold Bitcoin. Because one, you may be creating a tax event for yourself. But number two is, if you're bullish on crypto, then you basically have to be bullish on Bitcoin, or at a bare minimum, Ethereum, because if something major happened with one of the two of them, it would affect the entire market in a big way. So I always say Bitcoin is king and Bitcoin drives the market cycle. So you can look at the price versus the dollar and it looks like it's basically straight up with these months of kind of flatness. During those months of flatness, it was probably a matter of Bitcoin going crazy. So relative to Bitcoin, the price was going down. And when Bitcoin is pumping really hard, I look at it in terms of velocity. If Bitcoin is high velocity, so like, remember we went from, it felt like we went from $3,000 kind of at the end of the Bitcoin Cash fork drama initially. And then all of a sudden after Thanksgiving, it was $19,000. That is high velocity Bitcoin movement. And during that time, it was not a great time to be in alts.
No, it was not.
Hey, I remember that.
But last alt season was when Bitcoin was dealing with all these uncertainties. And that's why I didn't first buy Bitcoin. I first bought Ethereum because it was gaining massive amounts of value, both versus the dollar and versus Bitcoin, because Ethereum had all these new and shiny ICOs that made it very interesting. And Bitcoin had all this, like, are there going to be two Bitcoins or three Bitcoins? Or what's the deal? Well, why are these businesses fighting developers? I don't get it. So that was scary to me at first. And then I slowly became a Bitcoin maximalist in the sense that I think Bitcoin's success overall is so important to the broader ecosystem that I want Bitcoin to go up. And for me, the time to buy and to be in alts the most is when Bitcoin is at a little lower velocity. So right now, like I'm happy for Bitcoin to go up. But when it goes up like 15% in a day, it's going to slaughter altcoins. Or when it goes down 15% in a day, it's going to slaughter altcoins. There's a common meme that's like, over the fall, you know, Bitcoin goes up or Bitcoin pumps, alts dump. Bitcoin dumps, alts dump. and if you really want to gain Bitcoin, you want to get new Bitcoin, you do it by trading alts. And alts will most likely have their opportunity to gain value against Bitcoin when Bitcoin is kind of sideways or low velocity. So I don't think altcoin pricing has a super significant relationship to Bitcoin pricing up or down. I think the relationship is actually more correlated to Bitcoin's velocity. And when Bitcoin is has a super high velocity, one direction or the other, that's not good for altcoins. But when Bitcoin is a little more stable, like you're not freaking out about what Bitcoin's going to do that day, there's more people willing to go and play in the alts market, and you have a chance to make some money on altcoins. That said, most people should probably buy and hold, you know, like look for a decent entry and then hold on for a while. But
I mean, we're definitely down against hodling, both of us.
Oh my God.
Even though we've
not like, even close,
we've gotten like, you know, we've done well on many alts. You know, when you actually put in the actual dates, it can be a bit embarrassing.
A bit. It's thoroughly embarrassing. If we well, have to hold it.
the best traders you follow, they probably hit their Bitcoin all-time high, like the ones that are experienced. They probably hit their Bitcoin all-time high sometime in like mid-summer 2017. And then even doing a decent job, they probably bled their Bitcoin all-time high until like the first week in December.
I want to ask you something because it's something in this space that drives me absolutely crazy, which is like, you know, everybody says that when you're choosing an alt, that what you should do is you should read the white paper, you should research the team, and then you should, you know, and that you should try and figure out what the use case for this thing is. I do this with, I promise you, I really do this with every single shitcoin that I buy, and I have found that it is absolute nonsense. The white paper is mainly nonsense. The idea that the team is important, like there are exceptions. For example, I think a coin that you talk a lot about, like 0x, like if you look at the people, they've worked on real projects. Mm-hmm. But like for the vast majority of the people, like, you know, you see the coin being discussed on Reddit or Telegram or something, and they're like, oh, well, this person like took a class at Stanford, so therefore the team is good, you know? And there's no way to verify any of it. Like there, it is just four photos usually of people, and then it says random words next to it. Like, I mean, how do you actually make a decision beyond this, though? Because for so many of these projects, this is actually the extent of information we have about them.
Yeah, at the end of the day, for me, it's going to matter in regards to where what the chart looks like. However, the biggest wins are fundamentally based. So Ethereum itself, for instance, the biggest win would be finding something that's like Ethereum or 0x is one you mentioned, and even 0x, like it went down for months. I have the chart literally right in front of me. It went down for months relative to Bitcoin because it was stable versus the dollar. But taking an idea like that, a fundamental idea, and buying it at the right time and then holding on for the longer term. Dash is another great example. You could have gotten Dash for like some absurdly small amount of money, and now it's worth $1,200 or $1,400 per or something, or Monero. Those are fundamental decisions, but those are cream of the crop altcoins. And there are new cream of the crop altcoins now that aren't billion-dollar valuations yet. Maybe they're 10 million, maybe they're 50 million. And those are the gems where you go in and you put a small investment, like 1% of your portfolio into that, and then you let it ride for years. But for the most part, if I'm looking at one now, when I'm choosing an altcoin, like I care that it's not a total scam. But for the most part, I'm looking for price velocity. So I'm looking at how good is the setup versus Bitcoin? Do I have an opportunity to make money? And how's the entry? And if you marry your bag, as they say, eventually you might get burned unless it really is going to be one of those fundamental winners.
Yeah, I mean, to come at this from a different, from the opposite side of the same divide, it makes sense that most things are crap. Most everything is crap. You go to a film festival, most of the movies are crap. You look at
that's such a weird example.
You look at seed investments and technology. Like, look at a portfolio of someone who's like a real seed investor in startups. They're investing in just trash all the time, just things that have such a small chance of succeeding. So if there really only are a handful, a dozen, a few dozen legit alts, that shouldn't really be that surprising to us. But I'm curious your view. And
I feel like Aaron right now is defending his Sumo investment and his Zoin investment.
I will admit
this talk before.
I will admit that I have been dabbling in the shallower waters of Cryptopia recently. But we've been talking about Ethereum today too. Ethereum's like pumping. We're kind of starting to talk about potential flippening again.
Most people would say by the time you start talking about the flippening, it's time to sell Ethereum. But
well, my question was going to be, would anything change? Like, so much of the orthodoxy of Bitcoin, of crypto trading right now, is that you're building Bitcoin value. You're basically playing a game to try to get as much Bitcoin as possible.
Right.
And I'm wondering if anything could shake you from that viewpoint. What would it take to not trade that way or to start ignoring Bitcoin? Would it just become ETH, or is there a legitimate future that doesn't include either of those being dominant?
For a long time, people that were investing in Bitcoin and crypto, they weren't 100% sure that Bitcoin would be the one. Like, Bitcoin was an experiment until all of a sudden it was the industry standard. And it's possible that Bitcoin could be unseated. The type of thing that it would take for me to not believe in Bitcoin would be a drastic failure in terms of its network effects. So network effects meaning exchanges giving Bitcoin base pairs for what you trade against, or a great threat would be like what I see with Bitcoin Cash. If they succeeded in hijacking the Bitcoin name from Bitcoin, and all of a sudden the real Bitcoin, if you will, becomes Bitcoin Cash, and it's controlled in a centralized manner by Roger Ver and Jihan Wu and their interests, that would be highly concerning to me, and I would be looking for alternatives. What I would probably be looking for in that case, because I think if someone dethrones Bitcoin as the gold standard of crypto, I think that would be a highly bearish move in the short to midterm. So I would probably be looking at being in US dollars in that case.
So look, you seem to have learned, one of the things that I have noted is that you seem to have learned a lot of this technical analysis stuff very quickly. Like, and it's self-taught, it seems like. It's not, I don't know, but I assume you're not taking like university classes on technical chart analysis right now.
How to trade shitcoins 101.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be the
top. What's the best way to learn this stuff? Because I think a lot of people, there are a lot of very smart people that I know who are starting to get into this space, right? And they have much better abilities with things like math than I do. And, you know, they don't know what, you know, like a cloud entry is. They don't know what resistance lines are. But there are things that these people, I think, could pick up much more quickly than I am. For somebody who is so inclined and who probably could do it, like, what is a way in which that they could learn the things that you have been learning over the past, let's say, like 10 months to a year?
Yeah, my podcast co-host is Josh Olsiewicz. He's known as Carpe Noctem on Twitter. And I think he's done a better job than anyone. And I've tried to emulate him, except I'm more willing to play in the deep, dark altcoin world than he is. Like, he sticks to pretty large cap stuff, and I'll chart anything.
You're willing to get dirty.
Yeah. But Josh is really great at explaining things both from a fundamental and technical perspective. And when you talk about cloud entries, like, he brought the cloud to crypto more than anyone, probably. Especially when you see certain cloud settings. But learning, you can read traditional technical analysis books for traditional markets. And then what you do is you take any concept listed there, like a Fib extension is one that you mentioned. So like the golden ratio, Fibonacci numbers, these are not limited to investing. Weirdly enough, stock charts and crypto charts, they tend to obey some of these fib levels. So like a 0.618 would be an extension, how much you can expect something to go up from the previous high down to a low and then reach that previous high and then go beyond it. ZRX is on that right now. I'm looking at it on a chart.
How many charts do you have open at a given time? Describe your computer if you ask her.
My watch list of stuff that I follow is probably like 50 to 60 coins. And each one has the Bitcoin chart and the USD chart and sometimes the Ethereum chart so that I can see what it's doing compared to each of them. And then if it's Bitcoin alone, I have Bitcoin for 4 or 5 different exchanges and I'll chart different things on them. So it's pretty crazy.
Now that you're kind of like a known expert in this field, and as you said, progressive waves are getting bigger and bigger, are like people that you were surprised in your life getting into crypto who you never would have thought would have?
The Thanksgiving and Christmas effect was very real. I went to a conference from my regular job. Like I run a trade business. And it was a tech conference, sure, but like no one even knew what ledger status was. And they just knew that I had done a little bit of Bitcoin investing from probably 3 or 4 tweets. And I got asked about crypto stuff constantly. So from everything from work conferences to my mother-in-law forwarding me emails about Bitcoin being dangerous,
she's not wrong.
Yeah, my 92-year-old grandmother, who has long enjoyed the stock market, was asking me about crypto because my mom had told her about it, but she was interested in it. And my 92-year-old grandmother had heard of Bitcoin, so it's everywhere. And I'm actually surprised the Christmas effect wasn't quite as strong as the Thanksgiving effect. After Thanksgiving, Bitcoin just went insane.
Well, we are really enjoying everything you're doing. Where can people find the podcast that you do with Carpe Noctem if they want to subscribe?
Yeah, they can just search LedgerCast in pretty much any podcast app. That would be great if they want to subscribe. We try to give people enough information, and then there's tons of show notes on ledgerstatus.com. So my username on Twitter is ledgerstatus. I own ledgerstatus.com. The podcast is there. And then I have a lot of other stuff I'm working on that will also go on the website.
Very cool. Well, will you come back on the show and give us an updated lesson at some point?
Yeah, I'd love to come back on the show anytime.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, Brian. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, guys.
This episode of Coin Talk was recorded Wednesday, January 10th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $14,476.
And with that, we bring to a close the very first episode of Coin Talk. Thanks very much to my co-host, Jay Crypto Kang, for being along with me on this journey. Thanks to Ledger Status for being our sacrificial first guest. I don't think he realized he was the first guest, but he was. Thanks to the good people at Medium. They're our partners. They help us make the show possible. The show lives at medium.com/cointalk. Basically, what's going to happen is we're going to record the show, get it up as quickly as possible, and then we're going to do a transcript for the show and get that up as quickly as possible. We'll have show notes with all sorts of stuff that you can read that we talked about on this episode. So if you're a Medium person, I recommend you go over there and subscribe. If you're more of a listening kind of person and less of a reading the transcript kind of person, you should subscribe to the show in the podcast app of your choice. It's in Apple. I just got an email that it's gotten added to Google Play. I think it's in Stitcher now. It should be everywhere within 24 hours if it's not now. So go to subscribe and tell all your friends, tell all the people that you're texting and Telegram channeling with about crypto, about the show. We need your support to make it huge. Send your questions, comments, recommendations for guests, and whatever else you got going on. Oh, hey, if you want to sponsor the show, get in touch. We are looking for sponsors. hi@cointalk.show. Again, hi@cointalk.show. We're also on Twitter @cointalkshow and Instagram @cointalkshow. We'll be putting up little clips from the show and all kinds of stuff there. So follow us everywhere you get media. Okay, we will be back very soon.